Welcome into the Poetry Tavern, a place to discuss both reading and writing poetry, spotlighting new poems and ideas every week. Hello into the Poetry Tavern. I'm your host, my name's Charlotte, as always, and in this week's episode we're going to be talking about archaism. So basically, like, the use of outdated words, phrases, structures, anything like that, within poetry, but, you know, this is the Poetry Tavern, so we're going to be talking about poetry on this podcast. Before I waffle on, let's just get into it. So, the first poem I want to talk about today is one that I have liked for a while. I studied it when I was, like, 17. So, you know, it's one that sort of lives in the back of my mind. I'm sure other people in my classes will have forgotten about it by now, but it sort of exists in a space with me forever. Maybe. We'll see. But it's Ode on a Grace and Perrierne by Tim Turnbull. Hello. What's all this here? A kitschy vase some Shirley Temple monk has knocked out, delineating tales of kids in cars on crap estates, the Burberry-clad louts who flail their motors through the smoky night, from Manchester to Motherwell or Slough, creating bedlam on the Queen's Highway. Your gaudy evocation can somehow conjure the scene without inducing fright, as would a Daily Express expose. Can bring to mind the throaty turbo roar of hatchbacks tuned almost to the breaking point, the joyful throb of UK garage or of house imported from the continent, and yet educe a sense of peace, of calm, the screech of tyres and the nervous squeals of girls too young to quite appreciate the peril therein are heard, but these wheels will not lose traction, skid and flip, no harm befall these children. They will stay out late forever, pumped on youth and ecstasy, on alloy, base and arrogance, and speed the back lanes, the urban gyratory, the wired motorways, never having need to race back home for work the next day to bed. Each girl is buff, each geezer toned and strong, charged with pulsing juice which, even yet, fills every pair of Calvins in each thong, never to be deflated, given head in crude games of chlamydia roulette. Now see who comes to line the sparse grass verge, to toast them in buckfast and diamond white, rat boys and cornrow cheerleaders who urge them on to pull more burnouts or to write their donor O's as signature upon the bleached tarmac of dead suburban streets. There dogs set up a row and curtains twitch as pensioners and parents telephone the cops to plead for quiet, sue for peace. Tranquility, though, is for the rich. And so, millennia hence, you garish crock, when all context is lost, galleries raised to level dust, and we're long in the box. Will future poets look on you amazed, speculate how children might have lived when you were fired, lives so free and bountiful and there, beneath a sun a little colder declare, how happy were those creatures then, who knew the truth was all negotiable, and beauty in the gift of the beholder. So this poem is actually based on two things. Firstly, it's talking about a Grace and Perrierne that exists. It's a really cool piece of art that sort of depicts this, like, life of youths in, like, in England, of, like, working class youths in England. Really interesting piece of art that, like, yeah. Anyway, so hence the title being Ode on a Grace and Perrierne, but then also it is an ode itself to a poem called An Ode on a Grecian Urn. And in fact, the last couple of lines from the poem, specifically the section, how happy were those creatures then who knew the truth was all negotiable and beauty in the gift of the beholder, is taken directly from Ode on a Grace and Perrierne. Those are the final lines in that poem. But also, like, a lot of the form structure is taken from that poem. It sort of sticks with it. That's a Keats poem. And there's elements where it's like the language is archaic, but it also mixes in these really interesting modern references, which I think is why it's an interesting example to talk about archaic language, because it's not archaic throughout. Like, it talks about garage music and, like, bass and motorways and cars and, like, it talks about these really modern things, but in this way that makes it seem archaic. But I think what's really interesting is that the poet, or at least the narrator, changes their mind. Because at the beginning they're like, this is kitschy, this is, like, you know, tacky, this is good art. And then by the end it's like, what has been done here is to preserve the lives of these young people and the way of their living forever in a piece of art. And it just doesn't have to be sophisticated, it has to, like, convey these feelings. And by the end it's like, I wonder if a historian will look at it, or a poet like me will look at it years down the line and say the same thing that they said about Grecian art, because we are just another period in time. And it's just such an interesting, like, use of language form. I just think it lives in my memory probably forever. Anyway, let's move on. So our next poem is a pretty famous one. I'm still going to read it because it is what I do on this podcast about poetry. But The Road Not Taken by Robert Frost. Here we go. Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveller. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim, because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as for that the passing there had worn them really about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves no step had trodden black. Oh, I kept the first for another day, yet knowing how leads on to way, I doubted if I should ever come back. I shall be telling this with a sigh, somewhere ages and ages hence, two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less travelled by, and that has made all the difference. One of the interesting things that I found about this poem when I was digging around is I found this brief, like, oh, how did this poem get written sort of, like, description as I was looking through, like, details about the poem. And it talks about how Frost and Edward Thomas, like, this was written about the walks they'd take together, and how Thomas was often indecisive. But, like, I think in its simplicity, in its, like, joking nature, like, it was meant to be a joke for Edward Thomas, but I think it's in its simplicity and, like, joking nature, it has touched on something that's quite deep. And in its use of language of, like, this was written in the 20th century, but it reads like something earlier, in its, like, structure and form, and in, like, its language use, in all of it, really. But it is a poem about possibility, and being about possibilities, it is a poem about the future. So it's really interesting to sort of think of, like, how would the past look at the journey forward? And how would... Yeah, it's just... How do you look at the forest when you are trying to find the right path? And does it impact the choices you... Like, not forest, literally, like, metaphorically, like... How do you look at the world around you when you are trying to find the right path to take? Like, which road do you pick on the highway when you don't have a set destination in mind? So, it's really interesting, and, like, obviously it talks about the road less travelled and being happier for the road less travelled. I think, you know, it's a really interesting thing that I think a lot of people nowadays take as, like, people who read this poem are like, the harder or the less trodden path, or the thing less people do, is the better option. And I think so much has come from this thing that was just like a little little joke between friends. I think it says a lot about the power of poetry that it does that. Anyway. So, that brings us to the end of our episode. Thank you all for coming in while I talked about new poems that have old stuff in them. I mean, they're not necessarily new poems, because I think Frost is from 1915, and Odin and Grace Perrion, Tim Turnbull, is from the early 2000s, somewhere between 2000 and 2010. But they're more modern poems than, you know, than some others. I suppose everything is more modern than something else, but other than the dawn of time. Anyway, I'm getting off. Anyway, next week is Christmas, so there will be a Christmas episode, even though it's coming out after Christmas, but it will be a Christmas episode, so I look forward to that. Thanks for coming. Hope you enjoyed. Bye!